Well, thanks for joining us, everyone. My name is J.P. Mangalindan. I am a writer, reporter with Fortune magazine, and I'll be sort of guiding the conversation this afternoon. With us, we have the guys from Maker Studios. We have Ben Donovan, the co-founder and president. We have Danny Zappin, the co-founder and CEO, and Courtney Holt, the COO. Mm-hmm. So roughly 86% of all internet users watch online video. 108 million Americans watch 1.3 billion videos online every single day. And chances are many of you guys are watching those videos on YouTube, which is where Maker Studios comes in. They are an end-to-end online video production studio that's doing for YouTube stars what cable companies did for TV shows years ago. So, Ben, why don't you talk a little bit about, give us sort of the background on Maker Studios and how it came to be.
All right. It started actually way before that with a channel called Lisa Nova. She's one of the other co-founders. And Danny, Lisa, and I worked on her channel starting back in 2006 and really built that into one of the top channels on YouTube before it was, you know, it was monetized or became anything that people know it as today. And through the ups and downs of doing all of that by ourselves, kind of came up with the idea that we could build a bigger studio that could support and provide an infrastructure to many more channels and a place where you could share audience and share that infrastructure, whether it's production or development, sales, marketing, stuff like that, and came together with some of our some people that we knew, some YouTube channels, and founded Maker back in 2009. And throw some more stuff in there, sure.
Throw some more stuff in there. Like Ben said, it was, you know, we were very passionate about the YouTube platform right when we found it, just because of its ability to, you know, reach a worldwide audience and to kind of be in charge of our own distribution and not having to go through the normal gatekeepers, you know, as to like the Hollywood system was, which could be frustrating at times because you spend a lot of your time, you know, pitching or auditioning or trying to get funding for something and not as much time being creative. And as so many creative people come to LA, I think that it's a system that, you know, only lets a few in where they're really like full-time doing what they love and so much of the time is spent doing other things. So the idea was to kind of create a company, and that's why we called it Maker, where, you know, we could just create what we want to create. We can reach our own audience. We can partner with individual talent, provide them some of the support and infrastructure that that they would need to kind of, you know, make better, bigger things and to build audience. And so that was the basic kind of concept. It grew pretty quickly and organically, and we began signing more and more channels. Most of those channels were, already had pretty big audiences on YouTube. Others were people we thought were really talented, and we kind of integrated them into the programming of our owned and operated channels and created a collaborative environment where they could participate in other people's videos and pick up new audience that way. And so it just continued to grow, and we've, you know, just got into gaming and many different verticals since then, including like even stuff like moms and Hispanic content. And so we've just been really, you know, branching out and continuing to grow the network over the past year or two.
Who's your most successful client?
We have, I think, three of the very biggest individual talent on YouTube as far as like a monthly view perspective goes. I don't know that any one of them is necessarily bigger. They're all in the same range, but Ray William Johnson has a show that he produces twice a week that gets about 5 or 6 million views every episode. And he generates, you know, anywhere from 60 to 80 million views a month. Nice Peter created a format and that we helped him produce called Epic Rap Battles of History, and he doesn't post as frequently, but those he puts up one or two a month, and those videos generate in the 20 to 30 million views per video. And there's also iTunes component with that, so it's driving digital sales of the music itself. And then we have these guys that are actually gamers called Yogscast. They have a channel called Blue Zephos, which is I believe the number one biggest channel on YouTube as an individual channel, and it's generating around 80 million views a month. And they're they basically do these really funny commentaries over video games that have like a big audience. Minecraft is one of the big ones that they do, and there's, the gaming community is very big on YouTube, and so they're doing extremely well. So those are our three main, you know, biggest individual talent channels.
Gotcha. And you guys cut revenues with the clients.
Yeah, we're on a rev share model, so in, you know, it varies depending on you know, how much production resources we're putting in, what level of promotion or they need, or, you know, just different things. But it is a rev share model. Yeah.
Right. You know, when a lot of people, I guess perhaps in mainstream America, think about YouTube stardom, they think of it as being more accidental. You think of perhaps most notoriously someone like Rebecca Black.
Mm-hmm.
Walk us through a scenario where you sort of, with the production studio, and recruit talent and then help them and enable them to find that success and produce the videos they do and market them.
Yeah, I think, you know, we definitely aren't producing viral videos. Like, we're not trying to create just like one random video that does really well. That's so hit or miss would be a hard thing to kind of plan for. But we're looking for talent that understand, you know, the importance of social media and the YouTube platform, and are willing to engage with an audience and really build a large engaged subscription base. And that subscription base, the way YouTube works, kind of guarantees a certain amount of viewership, because those people have chosen to, every time you put a video out, have that delivered to them, and so that they know when a new piece of content is created. So we work with them to help build the subscriber base by, you know, cross promotion and just giving them advice on, you know, what type of formats and how consistent to post and how to engage audience. And then from there, it's, you know, it just depends on, you know, finding the right format and being consistent, and certain things can really take off. And
Nice Peter is like a perfect example of that. He was someone who we thought was incredibly talented. We brought him in. We started putting him with, I don't know how much people know about the YouTube stars, but people like Kasim G and Shay Carl, who are two of the biggest channels on YouTube and two of our co-founders. So find formats that they can do together, and, you know, they get integrated, and then work with him to figure out what he's going to do on his channel. And he and his partner came up with this great series called Epic Rap House of History. And then, you know, we coordinated cross promotion and help. You know, we have a full studio, so a production studio, so we shoot and edit everything, and then it's a great format that they came up with. So it's like having a hit show that, if the right audience is driven there, hopefully it takes off like that one has.
Yeah. How many videos do you guys do per day? Right? Is there?
We're producing about 300 or 400 videos a month right now. A lot of the talent produces videos on their own, and specifically the gaming channels produce a lot of content on their own and post a lot more frequently. So we're probably uploading on our network around 3,000 videos a month, but physically producing, you know, with our staff, around 300 or 400 a month.
I want to underline something that Ben and Danny were articulating. It's important to note that the talent that comes to Maker that's successful is treating it like full-time work. It's not something that they're doing on the side. They actually are dedicated to creating programming that has an authenticity, a direct connection with the audience, and a sustainability, because these things aren't about, I'm going to go do this quickly and bail and go do something else. They're really committed to the platform and committed to their product, and I think that's one of the reasons these guys are so successful.
And that they're real partnerships. We look at them like that's what they are. It's like coming together and really together trying to find the best way to build that channel.
It's great to see the talents there. Like, in the, you go to the building and the talents comes by and they're part of the team. And it's a real kind of family environment that these guys have nurtured. I've worked in traditional media companies, and it isn't like when talent's in the lot, they're usually there for an audit or for a deal. Like, they're not there for the reasons to have a creative conversation to get integrated into a process. They're sort of there for business reasons. I think that's one of the secret sauces these guys have developed within Maker.
Well, how do you find that new infusion of talent? Some of these people are probably stars within their own right. Others are probably still sort of up and coming. So what is that process like?
It's all over the place. It was mostly like in the beginning, like people we knew that we were friends with because we were on YouTube. And from there, you know, people are friends with other people, and just different people want to be involved. So just kind of organically just went through the process of, you know, bringing in a lot of different channels. And now we're trying to get a little more of a systemized process in place to just kind of, you know, because there's so many people and we can't produce for everyone. And so we're trying to, you know, expand our partnerships into different kind of tiers, essentially, like some that are more of a network partnership that's not requiring a lot of heavy production, just more of a sales kind of promotional kind of network partnership, and then being a little more strategic within, you know, what channels do we need within each vertical that fit kind of something that's missing, and you know, we're trying to build enough scale in each category. So, you know, we may go out and actively look for, you know, some more moms now that we can, you know, the moms content we're doing now has been very successful and it has had a lot of organic growth out of the gate. But like, it's hard to find on YouTube moms who are making videos because they're so busy. So like, trying to find, you know, the right type of people that fit the categories is kind of where we're getting into now, and just being a little more targeted. But we're in LA, so there's no shortage of like people who want to be talent. So it's more finding the right people now who are really dedicated and committed and understand it and are going to treat it like a full-time commitment, you know, and not a stepping stone or just a promotional vehicle for something else.
Yeah.
And we're dedicated to, you know, select hubs. So those verticals that we're focused on, we have the company-owned hub, and then we have talent that kind of surrounds it. So it is a hub-and-spoke model. And so it's focused also on looking at talent that, as Danny was suggesting, in a category like moms, they have to align with the culture we're trying to build around our company-owned hub, and they have the benefit of participating in that, getting the benefit of marketing and promotion, but also they can, you know, sort of be part of this larger ecosystem that's scaling.
Gotcha. And what's unique about you guys is that you're super transparent when it comes to how much people are making, how much your clients are making. Sort of talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when you're an individual YouTube content creator, you see your AdSense every day. You pay attention to that stuff, especially once you start generating actually revenue that you're making a living off of or whatever. It's your living. You don't get a guaranteed paycheck. You get paid based on how many views you get, you know, and what the revenue is. So it was a challenge when we first started Maker and wanted to start signing the channels in, because the individual content creators kind of lose that ability then, and unless, you know, unless we want to let them log in and see what everybody else is making, which we also don't want to do. So it created a challenge for us, and we really wanted to be completely transparent with everyone. We think it's critical in this new model and moving forward on YouTube to be completely transparent. But it also created a lot of work, because we're like taking screen grabs of CMS for what ended up being hundreds of channels. So while we really wanted to be fully transparent, it was a challenge, and we weren't as good at it as we needed to be. And so we really recently we're excited because YouTube enabled the ability for us to turn on, so all of our individual partners can see the gross revenue coming in before the rev share. And so we've recently enabled that, and you know, we think that's, you know, critical moving forward in this business. We hope that all the other networks would do the same. You know?
How much can someone make through you guys before you guys take a cut?
It just varies so much. I mean, it's so, unfortunately, it's like heavily reliant on viewership. Mm-hmm. I mean, but then there's other ways you can generate revenue, like, you know, through brand deals, integration, merchandise. So it depends on all the different ways that we're monetizing. But I mean, you know, certainly can make six figures. You know, top talent can certainly make, you know, a better than a good living, you know.
And how much is your cut
of that? It varies. I mean, you know, some are like, it depends on if we're building someone from the ground up, we're investing a lot of money, you know, into them, you know, it can be close to a 50-50 partnership in some cases. But in a lot of cases, when someone's coming with an audience, coming with already, you know, a library of content that they're generating revenue, we'll create a threshold kind of like to give them, you know, they make 100% of what they kind of already were, and we want to share only on the upside of what we're creating for them from there, from that point on. So there's a lot of different variations of it. But
I mean, because of Maker's confidence and its ability to drive audience and build up opportunities for talent, and because of our degree of transparency, it just becomes a partnership that's built on the uplift that we can create together. Everything is transparent, so the deal structures are usually related to how much work and effort we're putting in, but talent's part of that conversation. It's not like, here's a sign this and we're done. And I think that's very different from how others look at the space. We really look at this as talent are our partners. It's something we value. It's the DNA of the company. These guys have been in those trenches with that talent building on their own. So it's a unique proposition that Maker offers. And I think that's what why talent's attracted to us, and we're attracted to talent that wants that type of partnership.
And that's a long-term play. You know, we're really trying to build these distribution networks and these channels, and it's not like a quick fix, like let's in and out. You know, it's like let's really find people that are, like you guys said, are really committed to the space and really want to make this their career.
Yeah. So. How many other companies out there? Well, who is your competition, essentially? You know,
I mean, there's no one doing it the way we're doing, you know, as far as like the studio and producing for the individual channels, and you know, we're really a talent services business too, you know, along with being a network and things like that. So I'd say there's definitely other companies out there that are would be considered similar in the fact that they are rolling up a lot of channels into a network and selling against it, but they're more I think most of them are more sales focused versus audience building, and so, you know, there's really, it's like being a part of a network is beneficial because, you know, YouTube sales team sells so much of the inventory, and there's so much inventory on YouTube that if you have a dedicated additional sales team within a network, you can get premium media on a bigger portion of your inventory, a bigger portion of your views. So that's kind of the main benefit, for most networks, but we have that, but we were really focused on driving more viewership as well and building audience and being part of the creative process and giving the talent a collaborative creative environment to work in and support and infrastructure.
Courtney, quick question for you. You were president of MySpace, and you know, so you were overseeing a lot of artists, a lot of content. What did you learn from that experience that you have brought over to Maker?
It's almost not what I did learn, it's what I've had to unlearn to a certain degree. I would say one of the challenges with any company that's licensing content and not really owning and having a direct relationship in this age is always going to be subject to the whims of the parent companies and the partners. And that means no disrespect to the industry, it just wasn't enabling. No one really wants other businesses to succeed on the back of their content. So there's always going to be a hefty tax that applies to that. The purity of working in an environment where you actually are participating in a partnership with the talent, there they are, you can talk to them. You know, the assets that you're working with are controlled in a way that allows you to have liberty. I just think is so refreshing. So to me, the frustrations I felt, you know, in terms of managing other people's IP have completely gone away. That said, you learn a lot about audience building and about how to talk to brands about this world. I mean, one thing you talk about in terms of competition is I look at portals and traditional media as competition only from when we're getting into the ad dollars because they're used to buying against audience segments, and we're actually selling influence and passion, which is really, really unique because this is what the young people are actually connecting with. You know, again, portals and no disrespect to them, but they tend to just aggregate interest and say, this is the thing you're buying, but you're really buying all of this. We can sell the influence that our top talent and our O&O networks are actually creating, which is, you know, demand on behalf of the consumer. They're tuning in on a regular basis in a way that young people aren't tuning into traditional broadcast. So there's something really unique about this, and I've taken some of those experiences and tried to, you know, retune them for this.
So what's next? What's down the pike this year?
Well, we just moved into a new space, which is very long overdue. So we're excited about, you know, just kind of getting everyone under the same roof. We had started in a small studio space and kind of expanded to like four or five different offices on the same street. So now we're kind of, we got most everyone into the same space. So we're excited to just really build, you know, we had a lot of success within the comedy and entertainment verticals and gaming. And now we're looking to really, you know, build around like our YouTube-funded channels, and music is going to be a big thing, and Hispanic and mom. So just trying to create a level of scale and bringing in more talent and just getting our infrastructure just as tight as possible as far as the services we're providing for talent and just, you know, all that kind of stuff. So who knows? There's just more channels, more viewership, more.
We should talk about the mom success, because that's an interesting one. I think it's important to articulate. I mean, this was an initiative that was incubated for a while, but it kicked off in December, and it's one of the more successful new channels that we have. And there's things that are unique about it. One is it's a 22-minute show that we're producing on a weekly basis around these five moms, and we have their individual channels as well. So it is that little network that's really working. We're seeing, I think already we've gotten over 500,000 subscribers and 25 million views on this little network that could, but it's really growing. And we love the fact that I think more than half the audience that's initiating a 22-minute stream is sticking with it. So it's showing that you can produce longer form content. You can start to create new forms of consumer engagement where people are not just connecting with the show. They're now connecting with the individual moms on Facebook, on Twitter, and on YouTube. I think that's a really good example of an early success we're having in this sort of, you know, made-for-web era. I also think and this is, as you mentioned, the YouTube initiative of Made for Web, of which we received some funding on these. This is a year when a lot of attention is being put on YouTube, and I think it's great that Google has invested in building up this ecosystem, and we like that more people are playing. It helps sort of the whole network kind of gain traction and relevance in the mainstream, but we also are seeing that the audience that's been with Maker for a while is just continuing to grow and stick with us and allow us to create these new entities. It's really cool.
Right. So to clarify, so Google's basically pouring $100 million into original content for 2012, I believe. How fundamental, it seems as though not just YouTube, but we're seeing other companies like Netflix, Hulu, and so forth, pouring lots of money, hundreds of millions of dollars into original content. That really seems to be the next step. How fundamental do you think that is for YouTube?
Well, I mean, say YouTube has said they believe in this and significantly. I think this is just the beginning. They're wholly committed. I think they announced they're putting a 41,000 square foot next lab in LA to help content creators, you know, create more stuff. And they've really focused on the success of original programming on YouTube. I think that all of these companies are looking at the value in that direct consumer relationship. I think some are approaching it with, you know, newfound thinking, and others are saying, look, it's just we're a platform, and it's just going to be investing in trying to differentiate our platforms. The great thing about YouTube is it's on every device. Any connected device that can stream video can stream YouTube, and it's primarily free. I mean, the content's there. I mean, there's no barrier of entry outside of logging in some cases. In some cases, that's not even an issue. So Netflix requires a payment. Hulu requires a payment for select content. Like, there's still barriers of entry, and some devices may support one and other devices may support others. YouTube's on everything. If you have an iTouch, if you have an iPhone, if you've got an Android tablet, Google TV, Apple TV, it's on all devices.
Mm-hmm. I think it's good also, just to get Hollywood's attention then equals getting the advertisers' attention and, you know, just changing the perception of YouTube so that, you know, advertisers are more willing to spend dollars there, I think, is going to be helpful because, the more revenue you can make from creating your videos, the more people can then create videos and potentially make a living doing so. And so, you know, that's always been a challenge because of the sheer volume of content on YouTube. It's been hard to get CPMs to a place where, you'd have to be a really big, huge channel or a huge star to really make a living at. And hopefully that barrier of entry will come down and you'll see people with more niche followings and audiences being able to really make it a full-time thing. And that's what's exciting about, you know, kind of this shift, I think, is that will have a halo effect and will help, while it's focused around more Hollywood studios and production companies, that it'll hopefully help the individuals as well.
Is there a stigma with advertisers? Do they see YouTube as being perhaps a bit more transient in terms of the content? So is it a harder sell?
Yeah, I think it's just there's so much stuff there that, you know, you just it's kind of has a reputation of just random viral videos or cat videos or whatever. Like, it's not perceived. I mean, everything's there. So there's a ton of great high quality content on YouTube. It's just there's so much content that you know, it's a giant warehouse of everything. So it's, you know, it's kind of, we need to kind of be able to create premium tiers within that and change the perception on some level, you know, and I think that's all, we're already seeing that start to happen. I think that's going to be probably the biggest effect of the funding that they're putting into these new channels is just getting a premium content there that, that advertisers are more likely to or willing to put ad dollars against.
Courtney, we were talking a few days ago, and you mentioned that was it your daughter who is more familiar. She watches her content more online to the point where she, well, how old is your daughter, by the way?
My daughter's 8, and okay. I got her an iTouch for Christmas, and so she knows how to find YouTube. But she doesn't know how to turn on the TV and use the guide and find a show she'd want.
It's kind of mind-blowing.
What's interesting about it is well, twofold. Well, she's so pleased with it because she can find what she wants. She can pick and choose, and you know, maybe it's short segments, but she really just loves that process. For her, it's a personal experience. And we really don't have, I mean, ironically, we just don't have TVs in our house. We typically use, you know, I call it the alternative screens, and we have one. We just don't ever turn it on. But it's like we're watching on iPads and we're watching on touches, and the fact that she can find what she wants in a unique way. I mean, we're finding, what, 35% of our audience or more now is watching our content on mobile devices anyway. So it just shows that this generation is going to grow up with a very different perception. I mean, I would never put a cable hook up in a room. I just wouldn't do it. There's no reason to. I think beyond the fact that, you know, I think TV's changed, I think it's just not something I'd ever do. And she's got ubiquitous connectivity on a device that gives her what she ultimately wants, which is cool.
Great. Well, I'd like to open up the floor to questions.
So how do you guys see this new YouTube model for sponsoring YouTube channels? Mm-hmm. How do you think that's going to affect your business?
Our business?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing is, like I said, the advertisers will hopefully, because of this, there'll be press around it, and you know, there'll be more premium channels there, and that media would then spill over into other channels that are in that category, and so I think we could see a revenue lift in our business on CPMs. Hopefully, you know, that would be part of it. It's also just, there's a lot of people now interested, and it's giving YouTube a lot of credibility, and it's giving us a lot of interesting partnerships and new people to work with. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of interest from mainstream talent and networks and production companies wanting to work with us and collaborate, which is, you know, so it's not only about YouTube talent potentially going into mainstream. There's a lot of mainstream wanting to get into this space now, and so it's an interesting intersection, and so it's exciting for our talent and for us to kind of have these new opportunities as well.
Quick question: mainstream talent, any names?
We should only do the ones that are official. Like Bobby Lee just signed, you know, signed with us, and we started his channel. Bobby Lee was on Mad TV. Lisa was actually on Mad TV with him, and so now he's here at Maker Studios.
Lisa Donovan, right?
Yeah, Lisa, our other co-founder. And there's who else is like? Can we officially say anything?
I don't know if
like it's all
there's a lot of things in the works potentially,
yeah. But it's been good that the outreach has been incredible. I mean, Hollywood is definitely paying attention to this in a unique way, and they're understanding that it's not just going to be this thing I might do on the side. It's like some of the people we're talking to are like, they really want to take it seriously, and they see that consumer connection to be really important for the future of their business, and they don't want to just keep waiting for a show to be picked up.
I think they'll see the value the way they do when, you know, they all have Twitter accounts or Facebooks, you know, like, I think they're starting to see more value in having like a YouTube channel because you can speak directly to your audience, which is really valuable.
Gotcha. You had a question.
Yeah. Obviously, with your network being so large, there's a lot of opportunity for cross-fertilization in your network. Are you interested in doing collaborations with other YouTube partners outside of your network, or are you just interested in working with your own guys? Second question would be, how much does your business model depend on that YouTube CPM, or are you looking to get revenue outside of that, specifically, you know, perhaps TV? I think most guys when they get into YouTube, the dream is bigger from YouTube to TV, with the revenue is a lot larger.
Yeah, I mean, what was the first question?
Collaboration.
Oh, collaboration.
We definitely collaborate with people outside the network. I mean, I mean, it probably depends what you mean, like in terms of putting tons of resources in. That probably doesn't happen as often, but it's definitely that YouTube in general is a collaborative environment. So, like, we collaborate with other YouTubers all the time. Outside of, yeah, Maker, yeah.
So the second question was, how much did your business model depend on the CPMs that you're getting from YouTube?
And is it,
or is your goal to get revenue from other sources?
Right, we're diversifying our revenue streams, you know, through merchandising and iTunes and you know, there's other brand integrations that are separate from the YouTube CPMs, but it is the biggest portion of our consistent revenue, and we were certainly looking to diversify that, but you know, it's important to our business for sure.
And you ask that even in other platforms. I mean, like, it's something we can think about. We're not limited by, but it's the center of our universe. So there is ideas that we could, you know, develop things that may go to other platforms or package them when it makes sense. But the goal is to make this the best it possible.
And a lot of that would be tied to their YouTube channels. You know, so a lot of these guys, if they did a show, they have a massive audience that they could drive to that. But yeah, I mean, it's really about building up the YouTube channels, and if there are cool other opportunities, then we're always open to those too.
And it
depends on the project. Yeah,
it depends on the situation. Like, I mean, there's, if it's something that we've kind of partnered on from the beginning and have helped put the production resources in to maybe pilot it, or it's a format that we've helped create, you know, there is opportunities that we're looking at that we would be involved in that case, but we're not prohibiting them from doing other things as well. But in certain situations, we would participate in it. Yes.
Go ahead.
What's the biggest mistake you see up and coming talent make on YouTube when trying to promote their videos that they can easily avoid or correct?
Promote their videos. Well, we made the mistake of cross promoting between channels that have totally different audiences, and sometimes, you know, it's finding the right. You want to find someone who has a similar audience, because it's about, you know, you can shout them out at the end of the video and say, hey, go check me out, you know, but if it's about the conversion rate at the end of the day. So I think making sure that you're strategic in who you're collaborating with. On a promotional standpoint, I think, you know, when you're using social media, you just can't seem too self-promotional. You have to really engage your audience and not just be promoting your videos only. And so I think, you know, it's about being
authentic, and I think really being in it for the long haul, like that, you know, taking time to find the right content that's working there, find your audience, not be looking at it as like a quick promotion or something like it's been a month, where like you know, like really having the right attitude that this is going to be like a long process, but it's going to be something really great and valuable, and just putting the time and the work in and trying to collaborate with different people, and like you said, not being too, you know, promote it all about me, but really kind of just really trying to engage with the audience would be.
And a lot of times talent doesn't, like, you have to like reply to your comments and do these things like that. Like you know, it's, you have to, if you want to do some high quality, that's great, but you still need to vlog and talk to people subscribe to people on YouTube. They want to feel like they know you personally, and then you can get away with not making amazing content all the time because they're your friend. So it's like, if you don't do that, then you're going to be held over. If you're counting on just that you're so awesome at what you're making, you're going to be in big trouble if you're not really cultivating engaged following.
I think YouTube and social media sometimes gets a bad rep for that, but like, it's very similar in my opinion to even mainstream. You know, like if you have a film, you go on the late night shows or you do interviews, and that's all about just connecting with people. That's why they're doing it. It's like, oh, I didn't even think about that actor until I saw him on the Tonight Show, and now I'll go check his movie out. Like, you're trying to get people to like you and go see your stuff. So it's, but in this format, you actually are speaking right to them. You're controlling it. So you, which I think is better. You know, you control what you want to say. And it's just about that engagement there.
Gotcha. Yep.
So, are you guys interested in producing slightly more, like, long-form educational, like, arts educational content? For example, in Los Angeles, there are a lot of independent, amazing drawing teachers that do not have any kind of web presence that I know of. There's no that I know of.
Right. I think that could be huge. Educational
yeah.
stuff on YouTube is amazing. I don't know if have you heard of the Khan Academy? It's a really amazing you have to look it up. I'm probably going to do a horrible job of explaining it, but it is. It's really doing a lot of teaching lessons of lots of different topics, and they're actually teaching in schools now, and it's been adopted pretty widely. But I think for us, I would love to get into that kind of stuff, and I think there's a lot of value there. It's more of a long tail because it's like people searching for it over time, whereas you're probably not going to build an engaged subscription base around that. Like as large of a thing, so like the return on the investment of the production resources, as long as it was something that didn't cost a lot to make, it would be worthwhile. And I think it's something I would like to try to. We're not actively doing it at the time, but we've talked about it, and we're definitely interested in the possibility
the
of doing
thing
that.
Is probably
music lessons too. I think
yeah.
is a good
yeah.
one.
Well, like even like the whole. Beauty gurus and stuff. I mean, it's different, but it is like it's a lot of that started from. Teaching people how to do your hair, your makeup, like, and that you find that audience where people are going on YouTube, like, I want to learn more about art, or I want to learn how to draw, or how to do my hair, or makeup, whatever it is. So, I think again, it would be a long tail where you'd have to like take the time and you find your that niche kind of audience. I know someone like Nice Peter, you know, works with a girl named Mary Doodles is her channel, and she's an artist, and like they're putting music to that, and she's starting to.
Sell her art,
and I think she could actually become one of, you know, pretty successful artists through that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
On the website stuff, I think it just depends, you know, like, I think it is good to have that in many cases and to be able to, you can monetize on your website in ways you can't, you know, obviously on YouTube and selling merchandise and controlling the ad advertising there. But it's another big commitment, and there's a level of work that goes into that. And so it's just depending on prioritization of what makes the most sense. But we're definitely working on some websites with some of our talent. And as far as most of the talent we started with is local, you know, in LA, because we're so hands-on with the production and whatnot. But we've started to sign some people that are, you know, live in different parts of the country, and they'll, you know, fly out once a month, and we'll produce videos for a week with them, and they go back. And so we're doing that, and we're also expanding into more network partnerships where it's more of a sales kind of social media promotional kind of partnership that's not as hands-on, so we can take on more partners, you know, worldwide and without relying on the production aspect of it. So so we are looking at different parts of the country and the world as far as potentially having eventually having offices, physical offices, so that we could produce for people that aren't in LA, but we're moving in that direction, but we're still heavily LA focused. The gaming network specifically is we don't produce as much for, and those guys are all over the world, and Yogg's Cast, for instance, is in London, and that's like one of our biggest channels. So,
and we have a small office in New York, but it's nothing. It's not nearly the size as the one in LA.
Yep.
I think it's really important that they have a voice and have ideas. We definitely have like best practices or suggestions, and we've built out our development team, which is going to work heavily probably on the owned and operated, but is also there for talent. But I think, like I said earlier, like these are like partnerships, and I think it only really works if you're coming with like your own vision, your own voice, and we like to help, but we never like tell someone what they have to do. But I would say, if you really want to be successful, I feel like you have to, you know, have some, you know, and there's a collaborative process, but like, it's not something like, well, I'm here, so tell me what to do. Like, I've, Like, it's just not going to, it's not going to work like that. And that's not usually a problem with most talent. You know,
we do give them a place where they can, you know, brainstorm ideas and stuff like that. And we help them, guide them as far as, like, you know, you need to do a format that's repeatable, that, you know, because to try to do a one-off every time is, like, very difficult and will be very draining.
And to engage with the audience, all the stuff we were saying.
Yeah.
And we have built out that team. We have a lot of, like, really great talented development people who are working with us now, so.
Yep.
It varies quite a bit. It's pretty cheap. I mean, it's, you know, for the most part, we're producing, you know, 300-400 videos a month, probably in the $200 per minute range if you blended it all. But a lot of it is, you know, really, really cheap, just like vlog type stuff, flip cam type stuff. And then epic rap battles can cost up to 15, 20 grand per episode, because it's like we're, you know, a lot more time and efforts put into it. So it depends on how big the channel is and what the deal structure is like and how much, you know, how much we put into it. But we have a pretty efficient, low-cost model when you blend it all together. It's a kind of a portfolio approach in the sense of some stuff. If you want to do this really big, cool thing, you need to do on your own these really cheap or easy things that are, you know, going to be cheaper to kind of get the blended cost down. So that way we can do some higher quality stuff, but it's, you know, we couldn't do all high quality stuff and have a sustainable business, you know.
Is Maker Studios itself profitable?
We were profitable for the first year and a half. We just, when we were first started, we're organically growing, and, you know, we've recently taken funding so that we can afford to kind of grow. So we're not profitable at this moment, but we're definitely moving in that direction and just growing the business.
Okay. Great.
Go ahead. Are partners that you're signing with entering contracts with you and producing exclusive content? Are they allowed to make their own? How's that kind of work?
What's that?
You're signing with other people to make videos with. Mm-hmm. Are they required to make content only for you? Can they make their own on the side? How's that work?
Yeah.
They could do other things on their own. It's more of like we're partnering on that channel, you know, and sometimes they may want to do a video on Funny or Die or some other, like, we're not like locking them in per se, you know, and like that they can't do other things elsewhere. You know, it's more like on that channel we're partnering on and what they're doing, and you know, so yeah, it's pretty flexible in that sense.
In the back.
Yeah, hey, I'm curious about some of the viewership patterns with the new YouTube channels. I think for broadcasts, you know, anyone who DVRs their content, it's that DVR plus 3 viewership falls off after a premiere plus 3 days. I'm wondering if you're seeing the window in which you guys get most of the video views. Is it 1 week after premiere, 2 weeks after premiere, or tomorrow to generalize?
Yeah, I think the changes have definitely affected viewership patterns, like you said. Because most of our channels have huge subscription bases, we always see like the most views in the first 2 days, and then, you know, the heavy drop off. You typically, you know, after the first week or two, and so that general pattern is still there. Nothing that drastic has changed. Although, you know, just ways the videos are discovered through the feed on YouTube has changed, and just understanding all that stuff is important as far as, you know, you upload it this time and you might want to like add it to a playlist a few hours later so it hits the feed again, and how you're interacting. And so it's, you know, we spend a lot of time staying on top of that stuff so we can, you know, help our talent with best practices on how to maximize their viewership and to, you know, get the most exposure for the video, specifically around the critical upload, you know, date, you know, the first 48-hour window or whatever.
And YouTube's a product. It's a lot of how you use it. I mean, you can use tricks like annotations, and you can use social media to also drive views. So we also see sometimes that some of our reoccurring successes come from catalog that just either gets re-promoted by talent or it shows up and recommended just because of relevance. So there's understanding how those algorithms work is really key to a successful network.
Mm-hmm.
You want to take that one? Yeah, I mean, like he said earlier, I think the process has changed a little bit. Lots of times the people we've worked with, it's just like kind of networking and people we know. I think, yeah, we're trying to, you know, we have to be sometimes more selective as we grow about who we put resources into. And I think we're always looking for new talent and, like, do they fit into kind of some of the verticals that we're working on? Do they have, like, I guess the right perspective on YouTube, like the right mindset of, like, this is a long-term thing and open to the collaborative process. And then people can, on our website, people can email us and stuff like that. And then we find, like, because we have such a big network, we're, you know, talent's always telling us, hey, this person is great or so-and-so. I forget, was there a second part to that? Or was that?
It's always... Yeah. It's always good. If you're a creator and you wanted to work with us, it'd be good to come with some sort of audience. You know, like already prove that you, on your own, can get to a certain level and we can help take you to the next level. Or in some cases, maybe you're not on YouTube yet, but you may have a large Twitter or Facebook following. Like, if you're coming with something, it'll make it easier for us to, you know, put resources behind it, because then it is like that partnership. Like, you're bringing this, we're going to bring this, and that has a much bigger chance of success than if it was just like someone who was talented but had never made a YouTube video yet and wasn't engaged in social media yet and didn't, like, if it was totally from scratch, it makes it much more challenging and harder for us to kind of dive into it, I guess.
And even for them, like, the best thing would be like get on there and see what it's like to be a YouTube content creator and put videos up and respond to comments and start to network. I think helps, I mean, it makes it easier for us, but also helps anyone succeed just to get in there and do it. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I don't know if you provide services at this level, but do you provide developer services? I'm not getting down into the HTML5 codes, but you can watch a video and click on the link, get a close-up of, you know, the background scene, and then, you know, describe it.
It's, we, you know, YouTube is our primary distribution, so we primarily use what they provide. There have been, I know they're looking at doing product integrations and some direct retail. They've done some tests with music and with tickets, so at some point they may get to that space, but that's not something we're actively working on right now. Well, a lot of our talent, like the Epic Rap Battles, and we have a great animated series called Your Favorite Martian. We promote that the music's available on iTunes. We put the music up simultaneous to the video going up, and then it's a click-through. So we promote it on the channel page, and we actually market it in the video content typically by putting a call out that you can go get the song. And it's sort of implied behavior that now people who love music on YouTube they look for the songs. So it's a good way to make that conversion happen.
You had a question.
Yeah, I'm wondering, since you're looking for people who already have videos on YouTube, do a lot of the people you work with edit their own content and shoot themselves and shoot their own B-roll, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, ideally they would know how to do all that stuff, and I think in most cases they do, or they've had some experience doing it. And then what, you know, we find that people who have done it all themselves and know how to do everything typically have the best chance of succeeding. Even when we take some of that stuff off their plate, they can be really involved in the process in a way you wouldn't be if you weren't a shooter and an editor and didn't know how to do all these things. So that's definitely a plus for us when we're looking at, not saying that we need, you know, if you get to a certain level, we definitely want to take a lot of that off your plate so that you can make more stuff. But in a lot of cases, you know, if talent's coming and they're already making like one video a week on their own, we'll say, look, we're going to partner. We'll make one video together where we'll kind of help put more resources into it so you can do some stuff you couldn't do on your own. But you got to continue doing your one on your own as well, because that's what the partnership should look like. And that way, you know, it's not like suddenly you stop doing everything and we take care of it, you know. So it definitely helps. And I'd say more than half still create their own, probably like 3/4 still create their own videos and edit on their own, you know, most of them. Yeah.
And some, like you're saying, some of the channels that are remote, they're, you know, they're doing that.
In the back?
On the Ant Monster side of things, it seems a little different than what you guys did, just on kind of the live action side of stuff, where you went to the guys that were already in the stable to make it versus finding voices that were already creating original animation that had followings in animation and already, that's it. I was just curious why you took like a little slight tweak approach to that versus how you usually approach it.
It's a very similar approach to how we do any of our hub channels, where we're having talent that has large subscription bases participate in something collective and different, and helping to drive that those subscription bases there. So it's about YouTube subscribers really and viewership. So while other animators may have a following somewhere, I don't know if that following is subscribers on YouTube necessarily. And I think to get the channel jump started, at least we felt it was the best approach to use to work with our talent who had followings there, and I think we could potentially expand into working with other animators or other people that aren't on YouTube as we down the road with the channel potentially. But that felt like the best way to start it.
Any other questions?
Are you guys familiar with
Hit Record?
Just
learning
levels online
interaction.
Sounds familiar.
I've heard it. I don't know.
That's familiar. It just seems like a really
okay, cool. What's it called again?
Hit Record.
Hit Record, right. Okay, yeah, I've definitely heard of it, but I'm not familiar with the specifics. I'll look it up.
It's kind of online, I don't want to say crowdsource, but it's a collaborative production studio.
Got it. Cool. Very cool. All right, thanks.
Great. Any other questions? Sure.
You guys have done a really good job of kind of leveraging big followings and creating multiple channels for those users. Provide just some insight on how you decide to kind of branch off to some of the guys come with their own two channels right away. But
You mean like a second kind of behind the scenes, or like an epic rap
channel, music channel?
Yeah.
It's about the subscribers. So, like we said, there's two things. You want to be really engaged with your audience and personable and feel like you're talking directly to them, but sometimes it's better to do on a second channel for the hardcore audience, and where the more of a mass audience may want to be there for the more well-produced stuff. So, while you want to keep that level of engagement going, sometimes you can damage your subscriber base or your subscriber module by posting too much content that's not what those people subscribe for. So, like, you might have had a hit video that was high production value, comedy sketch thing that a bunch of new people subscribe to, and they don't know who you are or anything, and suddenly now they're getting all these videos of you just talking, and they're like, so it's like it's just a weird balance on YouTube behind, like, you have to engage your audience, but there's also this much bigger audience out there that you can potentially find that doesn't want to see you talking to them all the time. So it's like finding the right time to split those channels off and to create a second one is a nuanced kind of thing that we just kind of have to just play it by ear and see how that feels. And then in other cases, like, you have a hit format show that everyone's there to see Ray do equals three, to put something completely different there might be weird for those subscribers that are expecting the same thing over and over. So in that case, it might make sense to make a separate channel for the music stuff. And so it's,
or,
just,
yeah, if you have a huge hit like Epic Rap Battle or Real Annoying Orange or something like that, then it makes sense to get spin it off.
And also must import some KPIs in terms of engagement, number of subscribers, thumbs up, thumbs down.
The three
biggest ones.
I mean, viewership, subscribers, like to dislike ratio.
Comments.
Number of comments can be. Sometimes people just ask a question, so it looks like there's a ton of comments, and it's not really. But, like, seeing what that engagement is there interaction going in there? So it's not sheer number of it. But I think like to dislike ratio is probably more accurate if you're just looking at a pure numbers basis versus comments. But definitely comments are very important too.
Do you know the correlation between number of subscribers and number of views?
It depends. Channels that have been on YouTube for, say, 4 or 5 years, you have a lot of subscribers, but they're not all active, so it's really a real important metric is your subscriber module, which is how many people are actually clicking your videos from the homepage of being delivered as a subscriber, compared to how many total you have. So if you're at 10 to 20% subscriber module of your total subscription base, that's pretty strong. So viewership can be 3, 4, 5 times what the subscription base is, or it can be 1/3 or 1/10, depending on you know, how engaged the subscribers are. So subscribers is a little bit, it's important. It's definitely important, but it's more like what portion of those subscribers are actually new or active or engaged. Is probably, I would say subscribers was more relevant and important 2 or 3 years ago than it is now, because there's been people been on there for so long, and there's, you know, the other channels box and all these different things. So subscriber module is probably more accurate.
Yes, in the back.
Hi. For big brands looking to reach your niche audiences, what kind of programs do you have in place for product placements?
We do. We have lots of. I mean, I would say that our audiences are sort of broad. I wouldn't want to call them niche. We have broad audiences. We have about 60 million uniques touching our network on a monthly basis. We've segmented by category, but we have the ability to touch both large and smaller audience segments. We have a brand integration process to work directly with marketers to achieve whatever goals they're trying to achieve. It has to work organically with the talent if they're going to actually be engaged with the product, because, again, it goes back to the idea of authenticity. It's not so much we can talk to top talent and say, just hold these products and market them. It's not really in their DNA. So we've got to find a collaborative approach that works, and typically they're tied to larger media. So you get the benefit of the brand integration and the authentic relationship, plus you get the ability to put some scale on top of it to achieve those goals for marketers. But we have a pretty good success rate of trying to get these things done in a way that benefits Maker, but also benefits the marketer.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get involved in clearances at all? For example, if you're doing a documentary and using some audio generated at a government hearing and it's supposed to be public domain, despite YouTube's advantage.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's definitely copyright filtering that on YouTube, and then in addition to that, we also are focusing on clearances with, I mean, it's probably less that, but music's a big part of what we do, so we're working very collaboratively with labels and publishers to clear audio for things that we're actually going to do. We're developing our own production library, which again is a service we provide to our creators, so they get royalty-free music to help create with. In a lot of cases, a lot of our talent are musicians, and they're creating original music. So, you know, there are mechanisms to avoid copyright issues, and then we have clear plans to actually create not just, you know, gatekeeping, but actually create real opportunities to exploit music in the right possible way.
Anyone else? Great. Okay. Well, Ben, Danny, Courtney, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.